agenda is as follows. So today is a day that's slated for halacha l'maisa about Borer, so we'll try to talk a little bit about that. And then tomorrow we'll continue with some more of the lumdus of Borer, at least for tomorrow, likely just for tomorrow, with the goal to start Tochen immediately after, presumably on Tuesday, and then we'll be able to progress apace from there. So to try to talk a little bit about the halacha l'maisa of Borer today, and we'll see if we finish everything we want to say. Maybe we'll carry it over a little bit into next week, because there is a lot to say, and it's hard to select out what to say. But it's hard to do a lot when it comes to Borer. Borer is probably among the hardest of the malachas in a lot of senses of the word. It is very hard conceptually, as we see, and it's extremely hard practically, both to deal with, because it comes up constantly, and it is very subjective in some senses, a lot of judgment calls, and just to both understand the principles and to deal with them practically is a tremendous challenge. And it's not just me complaining, this is a distinguished legacy in the Sfarim, all pointing this out, that Borer is uniquely challenging when it comes to the Malachos. Harfness has a tshuva, but he begins his discussions on Borer, that it takes a whole different tenor than all the other Malachos in terms of just its complexity, in terms of how things just keep getting harder, both again in the sense of understanding what the rules are, what the klalim are, and the fact that it presents such a challenge to day-to-day life within the one day a week that it comes up. That being said, it's also made, the point is also made in the other direction, that it has its tzad kula compared to the other malachas, that most of the things you want to accomplish that have Borer challenges can be accomplished anyway. You have to find a workaround. Right? Often, if something is a malacha, so then there's little you can do about it. You have to wait till Sunday. But in the case of Borer, on the one hand, you have many, many challenges. On the other hand, there are ways sometimes, almost always really, to deal with it, and therefore it has a certain tzad kula compared to the other malachos, except that tzad kula is only there if you're knowledgeable. If you're not knowledgeable, so you're still confronted with constant possibility of chil shabbos, and really emacha chumra gedol mizu, so that's, one could argue that the chumra component of Borer far outweighs the kula component. So that being the case, to go through every single individual situation of Borer would take us many, many hours, and then we still wouldn't be finished. So what we're going to try to do is to lay out some of the klalim, some of the principles, some of the common cases, and especially because we have aspiring poskim in the room, we have aspiring rabbinical students, maybe we have those who aspire to be rabbinical students, so it's important also, not just in terms of the bottom line, but to have an exposure as much as possible to the process. So I think one thing we should be aware of is where there are a lot of machlokas within this area, even if the contemporary practical guides have taken a certain stance, it's worth being aware of the existence of the machlokas, some of which we've touched upon already, some of which we haven't, but in any case, even the ones we've talked about, we'll reiterate because it factors in. You should be aware that some of these issues are shani machlokas. Some of them are machlokas of recent nature, are not resolved, even if the impression one may get is that they are resolved. Ed, did you want to comment on that? Okay, hi.
How much are we supposed to, I mean, this is more of a general psaka question, but like, when you have so many machlokas in such an area like this, so then how are you supposed to say mutter, say asr, like?
Yeah, it's a fair question. So for the most part, you know, there's a lot of judgment calls that are involved in this issue, partially because of the machlokas, and partially because there's a lot of subjective guidelines, as we'll see. Some of them are extremely subjective. So a lot of it has to do with your experience and your judgment. And your awareness of the fact that some of the issues are machlokas maybe won't come into play so much now as maybe they will 10 years from now, that maybe the more experience you have in looking at different situations and seeing how things come up, the more you'll be able to factor in, and the truth is this side is machlokas anyway. Or to put these two issues together, both of them are machlokas, and that also comes into play. Of course, since for the most part, especially what we'll be talking about today, most of it really is an issur d'oraisa. We're not dealing with gzeiros d'rabbanan and some of the other malachas that we've talked about. So there are many d'rabbanans that are involved. You know, we talked about kotzer, we talked about many of the other malachas. So d'rabbanans played a very big role in the discussion. Here, it's not to say that there are no d'rabbanan issues, but a lot of it is a question of, is there an issur d'oraisa of borer or not? So it starts off as a sveika d'oraisa, but not all sveikas are equal. So it's a question sometimes of adding up what the weight is of the issues. And therefore, the fact that we may accept something as prohibited, it's not a d'rabbanan in this case, it's really a chashash of a d'oraisa, but the question is, how much of a chashash is it? We're really saying that Rosh Hashanah is d'oraisa? We're saying, listen, there are enough poskim who are machmir about this, so we'll avoid it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're fully convinced that it's an issur d'oraisa, and that factors into the analysis as well. Again, not necessarily for today or tomorrow, but over the course of your career as poskim, just to be aware of some of these issues is worthwhile. So the first one that we've mentioned already, but again, it's worth emphasizing and being aware of it, is the whole issue of kelim, where this comes up a lot, is itself not really clear from the Gemara or the Rishonim that kelim is an issue, even though, again, in contemporary Sfarim, it is taken as pretty much of a given. But it's really an issue that's introduced by the Taz. They don't really find it in the Shulchan Aruch either. It's really the Taz who comes in and tells us that the concept of Borer is extended to Kalim and Begadim. And in Tzitz Eliezer, we mentioned this before, I'm just reiterating it here, Tzitz Eliezer has a truth about this, where he says on the one hand there were those who argued, but many of the later Svarim, or the vast majority of the later Svarim, have taken this as a given. It's worth pointing out a notable exception is the Or Sameach. The Or Sameach is not living so long ago. The Or Sameach lived in the 20th century. In his Sefer and Hilchos Shabbos in Perek Ches Halachi Ralef, where you have this discussion. So the Or Sameach says that he has pretty harsh words for the Taz. He thinks the Taz has just made a mistake on this point. He says it's a toast. It's not correct. He says it could be that it's not specifically Ochel. Maybe there are other things that are included in the gather of Borer. The truth is we talk about Sararos, which technically is not Ochel. Technically that is pebbles, but again, it's the part that you're separating out, so maybe that has to at least be from Ochel. But you could argue that maybe it doesn't have to be exactly Ochel, but it does have to be a Taruvus, which is one of the major, major subjective areas of this specific Malacha. And we'll talk about it a little bit more. Now, the issue of Borer only applies when something is really mixed in, and the Or Sameach asserts that when you're dealing with Kalim, Begadim, you don't really have the Taruvus. The fact that they're next to each other, the fact that they're on top of each other, doesn't make them actually mixed in the same way jelly beans are mixed in with each other, the same way a salad is mixed. Begadim and Kalim simply do not create a Taruvus in the same sense. So he says in very strong terms, he thinks that what the Taz wrote was a mistake and that it's not correct. So again, this is coming from a pretty major voice of the early 20th century. So it's not like it's 100% a resolved issue, even though again, in the later part of the 20th century, it does seem to be taken pretty much as a given, and certainly not saying that's not the case, but to be aware that there is somewhat of a disputed history about that point also is factored in. And so for example, I think we mentioned last week that the Tshuvas Pri HaSadeh was Reblazer Deutsch, who's a Dayan in Bonihad, so he points out again that if you have other Sveikas and Achronim mixed in the situation, that it's also a Kalim issue, so then there is perhaps more grounds to be made putting the different things together. We've also mentioned that there is a machlokus among the Rishonim about the assumption, which the Shulchan Aruch is sure about, and again others are assert that to be the case, that we require all three conditions in order for it to be mutter, that it has to be done biyad, and that it has to be done la'alter, and that it requires all chumitot psoles. So that last condition is a subject of a machlokas harishonim. And there were a number of Rishonim who did maintain that if it's for the purposes of altar, then even solos mitoch ochel could theoretically be mutter. Maybe davka in situations that Tosfos talks about, where the solos meruba al ochel, that's one possible condition. Maybe it's not a condition. This does exist as somewhat of a machlokas, and that's something, again, that Rav Harfenis, for example, says is worth keeping in mind. Just I'll read you. Find it quickly exactly what he says, because it's a good example of this point. It's in his first tshuva on Borer, he has about 100 pages of tshuvas on Borer, in his first tshuva on Borer, so he mentions that machlokes, that there are a number of Rishonim that do say this, and then he says at the end of that paragraph, that when there are other factors that are in dispute, that sometimes this is something to be aware of, that there is such a view that even solos mitoch ochel is mutter when the other two conditions are there. A third factor to be aware of that is also perhaps relevant. So we mentioned the Yerushalmi's view that one is only in violation of Borer when one completely gets rid of all the psolas. So we also mentioned that it's not likely that the Bavli or all the poskim who followed the Bavli accepted this view. We mentioned in the context of the Lumdus that this seems to be the other half of the Zora Machlokas, that was the Bavli Yerushalmi Machlokas, and that in that case also it was basically assumed that the Bavli didn't follow the opinion of the Yerushalmi in terms of defining Zora. There it was focused on the question of whether spitting into the wind was called Zora, but it was part of a larger discussion about the linkage between Zora and Borer, and there were a couple of other details involved. So one of those details is the Yerushalmi has this view that one only violates Borer if he completely cleans out the psolas, and it's generally assumed that this is not the view of the Bavli. But it's, again, not 100% the slam dunk. There is some validity to that view. Even in the case of Zora, we mentioned, we saw that it wasn't 100% clear that the Bavli wasn't in agreement or that Poskim didn't take it into consideration. So to here, you have at least some glimmer of such an idea occasionally, and you have it in different forms. You could say it because of the Yerushalmi's type of approach, and you could say that Borer is about perfecting something, where you can't really perfect it if you don't really get rid of all the psoles. But again, that also, once you take that view, then you're also not really getting involved with Kalim and Begadim and other things also, where one object is not really affected by the removal of the other object. So again, you could argue that that's not really the accepted understanding, but it's there in the background. Also, you could say a different version of this, that the fact is that, again, we'll use the model of my useless spam folder. So if you have an inbox and a spam folder, and all it does is it puts half of your mail in one and half your mail in the other, so eventually it's not doing anything related to Borer. So ideally, Borer is going to involve all the Ochel in one place and all the Psolas in another place. So you could argue that you don't have to clear out all of the Psolas, but clearly if there's no distinction between the two piles, each one is 50-50, so that's not really going to be called Borer. So to a certain extent, you're losing the definition if you're not doing a full job. So maybe we don't have to necessarily say it like the Yerushalmi, that you have to 100% purify it completely. But if there is a mixture still in both halves, so then you're going to be losing your definition of Borer. So we'll get to this more, because you see this much stronger Leheter when the psolas that you take out involves ochel also. That is a much more relied upon heter. But it's a reflection really of both halves of the equation, that while we're really emphasizing taking ochel out with the psolas, if you're leaving psolas in with the ochel, it's not an unrelated svar. And again, there is some room for that to play somewhat of a role in the mentality, even if it's not the normative halacha straight up. Okay. So then, some of the issues we mentioned before, one of the major, major subjective territories is what does Taruvus demand? And here, it's very unclear. A lot of the later poskim are a little more makel than the way it sounds in the Ramah. The Ramah talks about two different types. He himself is making on the idea that it has to be two different types. We saw that was based on the Shema Sadeshin, that if it's one type, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, so separating different kinds of one type. It's hard to find the right word to use other than type, but separating within one type is presumably not Borer. The Taz was machmir on that also, but a lot of the poskim, such as the Mishnah Berurah after him and others before him, like the Ramah, did not accept that. The Ramah filed with Shimon Sadeshin, so that's first the Kula. But once that's the case, so what makes something a taruvus within a different minim? So the Ramah has a statement where even if the pieces are very big and you can make them out already, so then it's still considered to be a taruvus and you still can't separate them out. In some of the later Svarim, you find that modified a little bit, that basically the point being, again, that if something is clearly separate already, they look like they're next to each other, but you can make out the different parts and they're big, these are all subjective terms. But the later Svarim have them in a little bit of a more lenient fashion in the way the Ramah phrases it, where he says at L'chumra that even though that they're distinguishable, it's still a taruvus. So at some point it stops being a taruvus, things stop being connected when they're too far apart and they're too big and they're too distinguishable. A lot of subjectivity in figuring out when that is, but that's one of the major issues that has to be calculated. And we said a few minutes ago that was one of the things that the Or Sameach brought up in his challenging the whole concept of begotten and canon being brought into this.
Right, sorry. So you know when we're looking at one type, so somewhere they have to be.
Oh, so then we'll get into that a little bit more. We'll talk in a minute. We'll talk about that a little bit about some of the efforts to define what's called one min, what's called the other min. Hi.
What would be an example where the Rambam and the later Svarim argue on this distinguishing between if it's two minim already, where the Rambam would say that it's not okay because it's even though it's still a little distinguishable, it's still taruvus, but other Svarim would be mainly.
Right. See, it's hard to speak on behalf of the Ramah. That's the problem, because since we're already dealing with subjective terms, and then we're dealing with generalities on each side. So it's hard to say it. To begin with, when you're talking about minim, before you get into the Ramah and the later Svarim, so already we're not 100% sure what those words refer to. So once we know that the Ramah's language is a little more restrictive than the language found in the later Svarim, but it's hard to put into his mouth what exactly he's talking about. I'll give you an example of how subjective this could be, using also a disputed territory, but when it comes to, let's say, Svarim. So if Svarim are mixed up in a pile and you want to separate them out to go into the right shelves, so is that an issue or not? So some of the Svarim say, talking about themselves, that it depends on what kind of Svarim we're talking about. Are you talking about Sidurim that all look the same, but I think as some put it, let's say you have Ashkenazi and Sephardi Sidurim, so hard to tell the difference unless you look closely and look for the little samach and the little aleph on the side. Or are we talking about huge gemaras versus little ritvas that all are orange? So you can easily see from a distance which what, and then maybe that's not called a mixture. So there's a lot of subjectivity just in what's called nicker, what's called mixed together, ready, and it's really hard to establish firm guidelines, and there's a lot more to read about it, but just want to be aware that that's one of the issues. A widespread heter that the Mishnah Berurah, both in the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha, he emphasizes is the case, is that in general it's not called Borer if you just need to get something out of the way so you can get to something else. That if something is in your way and you want to push it out of the way so you can get to your thing, so yes, the thing you're pushing out of the way is soulless, it's not what you're interested in, but that's not an act of Borer, that's an act of Siluk. You are removing that which is in your way. So many seem to accept, I'm not sure if anyone explicitly argues on this, many seem to accept the Mishnah Berurah's assumption here that there are certain actions of pushing away soulless that aren't about Borer at all, it's just about being able to reach what you want. So it's going to play out that if you're looking for something and you want to set aside, okay, a pile, this is this and this is that, then you're going to get involved in Borer issues, but you know that something is at the bottom of the pile and you can only get to the pile by pushing away the other things that are there so that you can reach it, so then that's Siluk, that's not an act of bravery. Hi.
So let's say there would be like a bunch of cards on the table, right? And so you would be able to just push other things away. You're not particularly separate. You don't care. You just want to push
them away. That's what he assumes. Yeah, that you're interested in trying to get to what's underneath.
Yeah, you don't care about the other cards. But now it's not a mixture, so then would you be able to ask?
So we'll get to that. That's possible. That's another disputed issue. We'll get to that hopefully in a few minutes. But step one, the fact that you want to access what's underneath, that's called siluk, that's not called bor. Hi.
In terms of defining as haromas, which I guess we're going to talk about a little bit later, how much does yeridea come into the picture?
Like, not that much, right. Except in the fact that we sometimes talk about different kinds of meat. But a lot of jokes to make about that.
I'm saying you would think that like there's a lot of literature about what is considered a haromas in terms of bittul and all this stuff. So you would think that like people have talked about this already and we just import it from over there.
Yeah, but you see clearly that it's a whole different standard. And when it comes to bas b'chala or the like, we're interested in nosein tam. We're interested in the impact that one side has with the other. We're interested to what side one has negated the existence of the other. While here, it's just a question of whether they are together at all in order to separate them, even if they are maintaining some type of individuality.
Well, like, even in like, the area, so we say yudia is a big difference to create a tarot. So even if you have two, solid objects next to each other, so it all depends on, when you find out about it. So that just doesn't apply here at all, you're saying.
I mean, it's true there's some overlapping language, that when things have independent identities, like, for example, you talk about a davar chashuv in terms of being batel, something that has its own davar shemminyan, or something that has its own identity. There is some slight overlap in terminology sometimes, but you're going to have a very difficult time assuming that the exact same standards, more than a difficult time assuming the same standards can be passed from one to the other. All right?
I was going to say, for Yavish and Yavish, you could say, you can kind of apply that to the case here, where it's not something really, Dotin Tom, kind of just more distinguishing between one thing and the other.
Right, so there is some overlapping language, and you can find Yavesh and Lach as overlapping languages in terms of distinguishing between Borer and Merakid, and we'll get to that a little bit. But again, it's used differently. It's hard to, it's nice to remind you of the other sugyas, but it's hard to use it in a way that really helps you to clarify anything here, and to separate out that which is relevant and that which is not relevant. Okay, so
That's frustrating.
It's
frustrating.
It's extremely frustrating.
It would have been nice. You spend everyone spends a year learning about what a tarobus is, what it's not a tarobus, and like, why can't you just...
I agree with you. That should be the most frustrating thing about this malacha. But yes, that is definitely frustrating. So, all right, so in terms of the question of what's considered tuminim, okay, so we mentioned that the Ramah has... actually, we have his exact language here, the Ramah's exact language that he mentioned a minute ago. He's talking about fish. So it says, beiz mine dagim, mikri beiz mine ochlim. But also, if you have two different fish, that's already called two different types. And it says, "V'asr livro echad michavero ela biyado kidei lachla miyad." You have to have those conditions. Afal pi shachatichos gedolos v'kol echad nikaris b'fnei atzmo. That's where he seems to have this stringent language, because even though they're big pieces and you can make them out, you can see which one is which. Still, that's still a problem. And others have that language a little bit less absolutely, but you see that he says, okay, two different fish, two different kinds of fish, is called tuminim. Yes, sir?
I don't understand. To what extent do we say if it's visually recognizably is different, it's not a tarot?
That's where it's hard to answer and say to what extent. It's a very difficult... I remember once somebody asked Rabbi Lichtenstein in one of the conferences. It started off the question, to what extent, it was more of a hashkafic question anyway, but it started off saying, to what extent do we say such and such, and he says he always is frustrated with questions, to what extent, because how do you measure? It's usually not within some type of system in which there's quantification. So that was true, the hashkafic issue that was being asked, but here happens to be that, again, this malacha has an unusual degree of subjectivity, and I wish I could give you an absolute principle other than encouraging you to read as much literature as possible to see some of the different cases. And if we had more time, we'd go through every case by itself. Rabbi Ribiad, for example, has many tens of pages about this, listing specific cases. And the more you read, the more you'll get some type of a sense of how it's determined. But there's no question that each one is disputed. There's a lot of subjectivity here in terms of what it means to be big enough and separate enough that it's not a tarubis to begin with. You understand the question?
Yeah, I was wondering, with the Ramah, is he talking about if you have two fish, just two fish?
Two kinds of fish.
No, I know that. I'm saying let's say you have your bass and you have your trout, right next to each other. Is that tarubis?
So next to each other, on top of each other?
On top of each other.
Right, so presumably they have to be at least on top of each other, but okay. It seems to be that he's seeing that as a tarubis.
Even though they're just like this.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's relatively easy to deal with because you guys just pick the one that you want, which again is the flip side. That as much as often as these issues are coming up, there's also almost always a way to deal with it. But enough anami that maybe that's a starting point to think that up first.
How many items make a tarovis?
So let's assume for the moment two, even though you could also argue on that. Hi.
Yeah, you take your two fishes, you have your bass and your trout, you know, the trout's on top and you want bass, right? Mm-hmm. If you go for the bass and you're like, fine, if you push the other one, you push the trout up, why don't you say you're just pushing it up?
If it's just a steel dip, right. So if you're getting it like this, right?
Which one's the trout?
Right, so you know that's a steel dip. If you're saying, okay, don't want that. Again, the differences are very subtle, but that's, again, the flip side of the point, that it's relatively easy to deal with.
Would you say both those should be mudra then?
Well, if you're doing it saying, okay, I want to get rid of this psolos, put this away over here, buy psolos. Okay, now here's my ochel. So then it would become an act of borer. It's going to look minimally different. You kind of get the idea a little bit that borer is one big smicha b'chol. Basically, it's not so much a question of can you do what you want to do, it's a question of can you do it in a way that will be right or wrong.
Maybe we just say that if you have, you know, say you have like a whole bunch of star on top of your chest, you might get someone to buy.
Right, so the difference is very subtle. If the point is that you're just trying to access your book, you can't get it because it's underneath, right? So then, but you may also separate off the solos where it's not blocking it. Right? Let's say you have both in your bowl together. Right? You say, oh, I don't want this fish, let me put that over there, let me get rid of it. So then that would be psolos, which is not involved in necessarily accessing.
Actually, it's the case where they're on top of each other.
Correct. Right, the kids, and the one you want is there. Right, the differences are extremely subtle sometimes. Hi.
In order to be in a tarovis, does it have to be contained by something? Meaning?
Not necessarily.
So what's the difference between having a fish in a bowl, mm-hmm. that's not a tarovis, probably, right. Right now, even though those are two totally separate minim, but having two books on a table?
Because if they're not next to each other at all, if they're not on top of each other, and this is part of what we were saying about the subjectivity, because at some point they become not connected. So if you don't see them as any kind of, it's a little bit of a perception. Do you see a pile? Do you see some type of a grouping? Or do you see a book here? Do you see a book there? I wish I could erase the subjectivity, Chabot, but it's always going to be that your point before, a minute ago, about how many does it have to be? Does it have to be more than two? So part of it is also that it's not clear that they even have to be physically separated. It could be that they could be in one thing, which is a little bit of a dispute also, but it could be that one item having two parts would be viewed by some as a tarovis, even though some see that davka's situation had there. So that's also a part of the disputed point, which I think is what Abram's raising. They seem to see it, that's davka lakula, just one thing. Is that what you're saying? I don't know what you're saying, unless you say some words.
I was just going to ask a separate question.
Yes. Sorry about that.
So,
not worth guessing.
So like if you have two items and they're not touching each other in a jar, so maybe like for challah that would be you put the two together or something, but does that make it a tarovis or borer?
It may, but again, so the question is what do you want to do with it? So if you want to access your thing and you want to use it, so then that'll be the pretty straightforward way to deal with it.
But is it a tarovis? I mean, like one's on one side of the jar, one's on the other side of the jar.
Have such a big jar. Most jars aren't so big that they can really be so far away.
And two marbles, red marble, blue marble.
And so, if you really had such a, chances are that most jars are the kind of size that it would really, in the minds of the perception of the person seeing it, it would be together. If you really had such a big jar, it was the size of this room, so that nobody would see them as being linked. So again, we're just trying to list some of the klalim here. And again, the subjectivity will still be there, but we'll just try to say what some of these points are. So in terms of distinguishing between the two minim, so the Prima Gaudium lays down as a yisod that the two ways in which things can be distinguished from each other are betam and b'shem. So tam is a reference specifically to food, different types of food that taste differently.
So either or.
So for example, if you have meat that's cooked differently, you know, let's say one's grilled and one's roasted or the like, so they have a different taste. So some would be interested in one and some would be interested in the other. So that's already a difference in min, enough to make them two different types of things. And also if they're called different things, and the idea that they're called different things, obviously there also you have subjectivity. Maybe in some societies they have the same name, in some societies they have different names. It's a reflection, of course, of kapeda. It's a reflection of interest. The fact that you bother to have a different name for something means that you perceive it differently, and sometimes you don't perceive it differently. The famous factoid about Eskimos, right, about Eskimos having so many different words for snow. So to us here, snow is snow. And to Eskimos, snow is 35 different things because it is much, much more significant and perceived differently. So here again, okay, there is going to be this subjective element. The existence of different names for things is going to reflect the perception of different purposes and of different interests. Hi.
So would that mean that there's a min ha-makom on the Isser Borer?
To a certain extent, it's not far different from the whole subjective Ochum Solus. That the same way we can say that what you're interested in is called Ochel and what you're not interested in is called Psoles, so we can also say that you are capable of perceiving differences in meat that other people aren't. So if there is a setting where everything has the same name and nobody would know the difference, and it happens to be that some meat is one way and some meat is the other way, so then probably one would say that there isn't an issue of Borer there, but where it's named differently, it's perceived differently, it tastes differently, and there are some people who want one side and some people who want the other side. And when it comes to chicken, you know, people who want dark meat, people who want light meat, but maybe you have a society where nobody knows the difference. Maybe in a Hanami it would be a different story. I think it was Sammy, then Daniel, then Avram.
So then if, let's say, you know, I coming from Chicago would go to the Eskimos, and then they would have this thing of snow. So for me, that would be mutter, for them it would be usser.
It wouldn't play out so blatantly because the chances that you'd be involved in a shaila where you care about what type of snow we're talking about are less likely because you don't perceive the differences. Right? So it's not going to come up.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, for them, they would care. So therefore,
you're right.
Totally ostracized.
Right, but it's not like you're living in different universes while you're next to each other. It's that the fact is that they are going to presumably be interested in one versus the other, I guess. I don't know what to do with snow. But I guess it would reflect that well for you. The shaila is not going to come up because it's not. You're not going to be interested in separating them. Daniel?
I was wondering, we have very objective standards for your idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, it's not your idea.
That's it.
The
wine smells one thing and it tastes something else and the rat falls in.
Well, is there, you finished what you're saying, I'm sorry?
But there's enough, that's enough focus about if it's considered Herovis or not. It's Robusta, Shaver, Busta, the actual polygons. What's the difference? Are you not used your idea criteria?
I think here there's a lower threshold than anything that would involve different interests in terms of different people or the same person would be more interested in one than the other. It's just simply a lower threshold of entry. Anytime, basically any standard by which two things may be distinguished from each other of significance seems to be the... You could argue that it should be the standard and you'd probably find someone would agree with you. But overall, the thrust of the literature is that it's a lower threshold of distinction. Was the same question?
Yeah. So,
okay.
I mean, it just seems like that your day is an objective standard that Allah is setting up here. It just depends on, it's all subjective.
I think that's correct. I think it is subjective. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he talks about a lot of the details of Borer. You can look at in Chelik Dalet, in Aruch Chaim Chelik Dalet, in Siman Ayin Dalet. So he has a lot of discussions in the Malachas. So there's a lot of practical tshuvas about Borer. So there he also talks about different types of clothing that have different colors. So he assumes that the reason they have different colors is because people are makbid. You use different colors at different times. It makes a difference to people. So that also factors into the equation. That also makes something different. Even though you might say that it's the same, they're just different colors. One could argue with that. One could say that maybe I had different clothes colors just because they were available that time. And I don't necessarily care what color I'm wearing. Maybe it doesn't make so much of a difference. So theoretically, one could assert the difference, but that's how he assumes.
You're just saying that, presumably, the reason why you're picking a blue shirt instead of a white shirt is that you actually care which one. Otherwise, that you wouldn't care which one
correct.
You take out.
Right. That's what he's assuming. Hi.
I didn't fully understand. Was Rav Moshe saying that it's because you would specifically wear a blue shirt on Sunday, or is it saying that I specifically want to wear a blue shirt now?
Right, both probably. That the reason you have different colors to begin with, he's assuming, is because they have different purposes and they have different settings. They have different settings, even though they look like the same type of clothing, but they're just, it looks like the only difference is the color. Right. But why do they have different colors to begin with? Because they have different goals and they have different usages. So therefore, that makes them two different types.
But let's. Meaning, let's say it's the reason why you wouldn't wear that outfit is because you wore it last week.
I hear that. That's what I said before. That I hear how one could argue on this.
So he's saying that it's not, meaning it's not because I wore it last week that it's a different color.
It's because it's for different purposes.
It's because it's for, okay.
Right, that's his working assumption there.
Do we consider a Torovis with solids and liquids?
Theoretically, yes. Even though, again, I want to get to that a little bit more later because it may be part of the differences between Bora and Meraki, but yes, you definitely see that coming up in Helfus Bora. For example, a fly lands in your wine, or you have items in your soup that you want to get rid of. So you do find Bora issues brought up in that context, at least theoretically. But this is relevant to the differences between some of these three types of distinguishing malachas, and we'll get into it a little bit more. But for now, short answer is yes.
Like Samuel was saying, so you could have like the Walmart white shirt, you could have the designer brand white shirt, and I mean,
yeah, you could distinguish within colors. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you're making that distinction. You're saying, well, this is the Spitzy shirt, and this is the regular shirt. And if you didn't care either way, then you could do the same thing.
Agreed. I can't take away the subjectivity, Shavuot. It's definitely still going to be there, but your point is well taken. So to get aside from that point for a second, so we know that there is a condition as well, that one of the three conditions is that it has to be done la'altar, that the permissible borer has to be when it's for immediate usage. So the Rambam writes in Shulchan Aruch that what does it mean la'altar? Again, he's focusing on food. Which it really is striking, the Rama. This is in Shinya Test Aleph, right in the very beginning. The first most Shinya Test is about the dividing halachas for the most part. It's a taruvis of Borer and Zora, and a little bit of Merake. Yes. So in the very beginning, there. So the Rama writes that the definition of la'altar, and again, it's striking just how much the early literature really focuses on ochel. But it says that anything that you need for that suda is called la'altar. And then you get into a little bit of discussion as to how much before that. So then there is some vague language. It's on the one hand, l'kula, it's assumed that once it's for that suda, it doesn't have to be immediate. So once you're preparing for the suda, so the preparation can take a long time, and you're doing all the preparations now, and that which you are selecting out, you're not going to eat until the middle of the suda. So it could theoretically actually turn out to be hours between when you do the brera and when you actually eat it. So as we alluded to a little bit last week, la'altar is not really a function of seconds. Even though in some of the Rishonim they talk about a shah, the Mordechai talks about anything that you want for la'achar shah is not considered to be la'altar. So some of the Sfarim, I think this is one of the questions that was asked to Reb Moshe over there, if I'm not mistaken, that okay, so should we say that means 60 minutes, that's the cutoff, anything less than 60 minutes is one thing. So he says, he doesn't think it works that way. That, but again, once again, you're going to have subjectivity, but it could theoretically end up being hours if it's part of a long preparation for a long suda that you eat at the end of the suda. And it could end up being seconds if the break in between this and when you use it is not relevant to what you're doing. Now, of course, it can't be milliseconds because you still have to be a normal human being, so you can still breathe in between selecting and doing it. So once again, there is a subjective factor, but that's a part of the discussion. But it's basically agreed, these points, that even if the suda takes a while, which even the Taz agrees to with all of his chumras and his issues, that if it's for that suda, there are those who would even extend this to the next suda, whenever the next suda is. That's a little bit more of a kula. But within the upcoming suda, even if this preparation takes a long time, so let's say you want to pick out, you have a tarubis of cherries and blackberries, and you want to take the cherries to eat right now, so you don't have to take them only one at a time. Let's say you want to have five cherries, so you can take out the five cherries, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then eat the five. That's all part of one taking, and that's all considered to be the altar, even though in between taking the first one and eating any of them, you took four more. That's still all one process. And it's not, otherwise it would be extremely awkward in a group setting. We'd have to take every item by itself and eat it immediately. It would be even more difficult than some of the other difficulties that we see so far. Hi.
Sorry to pull a random question sort of off this lower level topic, but yes. When you're cutting bread on Shabbos, some people will cut the bread in the middle of the challah, mm-hmm. So then would pushing away the one end of the challah be lower?
Yeah, it's definitely menachah.
Oh, that's true.
Right, and that's, I don't think anybody...
That's fine.
Yeah.
Blackberries on the bugs of them?
So, the bugs issues separate without getting into that whole discussion.
Just, I would say it's a bus issue.
Right, so just picking random fruits, whatever. None of us, I think neither of us are big fruit eaters, but whatever fruits you've already
said. No, he's saying to check your email.
Oh, back that, but oh, that's true also. So those blackberries for sure have bugs in them. Okay, in any event, so that's the basic assumption. What if you were mavar or something from the altar, and then you end up not eating it? So it strikes me that for sure should be mutter, because again, this is all about what you intend to be doing. As we mentioned last week, there was a little bit of a question in the Sdei Chemed, whether it's Hasra Safek, if you tell somebody they're going to be Borer, because who knows, they may end up using it Ba'alter. So it's not just a question of what happens to follow, it's a question of a certain process that you're doing this because you're about to eat. So if you happen to change your mind. So presumably, that should make a difference. It's true that there is a little bit of a discussion about this. The Levush was very machmir about this. He thought that potentially that turns into an av malacha. Others thought that there was some drabbanan involved, but many were makel on this, and I think there's a strong svara to be makel on this. The Shuvah Sisorus Shuva says that that's the derech achilu, that you take things and sometimes you don't end up eating them, sometimes for whatever reason you change your mind. So that's he assumes that that's not a problem.
Not a problem in what sense? Meaning, you weren't supposed to do it, but it's not like Shabbos?
Or you shouldn't say that, for example, now I'm mechuyev to eat it, because otherwise the mafrei is going to be a problem. So I have some here, and I already selected it. Maybe I should think I'm mechuyev to eat it. So that I think is very compelling. Rav Harfinis has a tshuva where he, on top of this, says, so let's say you're talking about a situation where you're not sure if you're going to eat it. So he thinks there's a little more room to be machmir there, that you're getting yourself into the safek. He doesn't discuss this, but one could argue that's also maybe a la'alter issue, that if you're so far removed from eating it, you haven't decided yet whether you're going to eat it. It's one thing if you take it and you change your mind, and you take it and you feel that you can't eat anymore. But if you're not sure in the first place, then maybe that's even a la'alter question. But he thought that it's not worth getting into to this machlokas if you're already not sure beforehand whether you're going to be using it or not. Hi.
Can you do a harama? Say.
Yes, so in general you can do a haramah with all of this, which is part of what we were alluding to before, that you know, it's not about that really you shouldn't be doing this. It's like once you decide that you are going to do it in a permissible fashion, this comes up all the time. I didn't mean to cut you off, this maybe a specific haramah you wanted to mention. But is there one?
Yeah, meaning if you're taking out 5 cherries,
right,
you only want to eat one of them. But you could eat any single one of them, so you pick up one and say, maybe this one, I'll put this on the side, and then afterwards you have 5 cherries and things.
Yeah, that's a little more of a harama, agave harama. That may be too much of a harama. But so, for example, what the Svarim talk about is, let's say you're about to take out the garbage and you see that your wedding ring fell into the garbage. So what can you do with that? So, wedding ring may be a harder example. But...
Well, if it's in the garbage, then you just do sealing side to side.
See, to get to the garbage.
To get to the wedding ring.
To get to the way, right. The problem is the wedding ring itself might be an act of borer. So what do you want to do with it? You want it to do what? So you're not going to use it. So then that's what they say. That's what they say, that even if you weren't necessarily planning on using this item that you want to protect from the garbage, so you could decide to use it right away as a token usage. That's where the sarama comes up. And so, for example, it comes up with Svarim also. Sometimes you find an Eitzah that you should learn with it for a second before putting it away or the like, which may not have been your original intent, but it's assumed that that's acceptable as well. Even though you're basically doing it as a harama, that should be permissible. One, hi.
Two quick things. Yes. First, let's say you're a host and you're not sure what people are going to eat. Mm-hmm. So is that considered over?
Yeah, so that's also considered to be acceptable because you're putting it there because you think that it's necessary for the meal. You're not mechuyev to know everything in the future, so it's all, and you could be generous about it also. So you want to go to the outer limit of what you think people will realistically eat, and then it turns out that they happen not to. So then that's already even more than the situation where an individual changes his own mind.
And then why can't you just say that malachus v'hashemes works here? Because since at the time you did the borer and you thought you were going to use it, so it should be fine.
I think it's very likely that's the case. I think that a person who, not necessarily having to come on to malachus v'hashemes, but I think that that's the idea, that this is derech atua, and if it happens to be that you don't end up eating it, so then it doesn't become a mafrei a malacha.
Wasn't it by the Zoraya when you found something around just to keep it there for 6 hours and then you said to leave it there?
And so that was a big machlokus. And if you really put it in such, well, it gets into so many details that and we're almost out of time for today that we'll come back to, but it involves a lot of machlokus. So I just want, we're probably not going to finish all the halacha maisa stuff today. Some of it will come up tomorrow in the context of going further in the sugya, and the rest we can extend to next Sunday. We'll also we'll have tochin things to talk about. We can talk about more of our things also, but because we just want to wind up in 5 minutes. But we'll also mention, so one of the major heterim that's involved, now let's talk about some of the different ways in which one can get around it. So there is a heter that many of the Gdolim held from, which it sounds like is based on this Gemara that we saw in Ayin Dalav and Aleph, that in the bottom of Ayin Dalav and Aleph, it sounds like there's a heter to take the pile and basically dump it in front of yourself or someone else. And the Gemara doesn't explain what's going on there, but the way this is understood is that that cancels out the taruvus status. So if you spill out the pile, and everything is now spread out over the table, so now it's no longer a taruvus, and now you can do whatever you want with it. Now you can take whatever you want. You don't have an issue of breira at all. And that was accepted by many of the Gedolei HaPoskim, such as Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Vosner, and I believe that that's a widespread heter. Happens to be that Rav Harfenis is not so sure why everyone's so into it. He's not convinced that the Gemara thinks it's mutter. It's not clear what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara tells us that Rav Bibi did this, and the Gemara then wants to know, why did he do it? He doesn't believe that there's a heter of Ochem B'toch Psolas La'alter. So one could say that this is coming with Chumrah, that even though it was La'alter, he Davka did it this way. But maybe again it was because it was La'alter, so maybe it was an active Borer that happened to be Mutter because it was for the purposes of La'alter, and this is the way he did it other than Ochel Mitoch Epsolos, which maybe he didn't hold from. But it's not clear that there's no Borer issue from the Gemara. One could argue that maybe the Gemara is coming more with Chumrah. So that's, that was Rav Harfenis's Netiyah, but again, I think many of the major Gedolei HaPoskim, again, with Moshe Feinstein and Vosner, it's already a pretty strong foundation, believe in this heter, that if something is de-taruvisized without your doing that through Borer, so it's kind of a workaround, but in the Hanami, maybe it's an effective workaround, that you can cancel the status of taruvis without, you might think that Borer is the opposite of taruvis, that making something non-taruvus is memela borer. So apparently not. Apparently you can negate its taruvus status without doing borer, and then you can take away the potential borer. So that is definitely yesh, very big almilus mochs for that hat there, even if there are those who question it. We also mentioned already earlier, we'll just reiterate, that taking some ochel out with psolas is also a frequently invoked heter. It's the other half of leaving some ochel in the psolas, which is a little more controversial. The Yerushalmi had endorsed that it was questionable if we accepted it or not. But the other half, when you take out the psolas, taking some ochel with it is a much more widely accepted approach. So, for example, if you have a fly in your wine, and you're willing to drink the rest of the wine, you just want to get rid of the fly. So the recommended way of doing that is pouring out enough wine together with the fly in order that it should be ochel m'solas mixed in. It's also pointed out that then if you're going to do that, you got to do that more than what would normally be involved. So during the week, if you would take that fly out of your wine, there's still going to be some minuscule droplets of wine on the fly. So that's not going to be enough. It's got to be something that's nicker that you still have ochel psolas there, not essentially psolas that has all the ochel that you can no longer remove. So I think it was Jonathan and then Michael.
So considering we have this general theory of we have subjective ochel psolas, why can't we say in this case, since you have to get rid of this specific amount of wine and the fly, that's all that's really subjective solace, and you are taking up solace to fulfill. It's like a halakha.
Well, that relates to the point we're just saying, that we're saying once we say that's the din,
yeah,
right, that becomes very circular.
It's a halakha.
Yeah, but that becomes very circular. It's the opposite of what we said when we talked about psikration nikolay, that you can't say the ister makes it nikolay. So this is the other direction, that you can't say yisuro, or you can't say yisuro hetero, that the fact that the halakha requires to do it makes it usher. That's not going to... You can say it in other contexts. You can say separating something mutter from something usher is 2 minutes. But to say that the halacha requiring you to take out the ochel makes the ochel into psolas,
right,
you know, it's too circular. It's the flip side of what we said before. That you can't say the fact that we talked about psik ratio last semester, and it has to be a desirable result. So the poskim, most of the poskim say the fact that it's usher can't count as making it something undesirable. You can't say the reason why it's usher makes it mutter. So to hear the reason why it's mutter makes it usher, it's much harder to say. Hi, same point. Okay, yeah, I think that would be a surprising chumrah. So there is also another major disputed point, but it's also worth being aware of, and this is also something that's included, that the Prima Gadim has a heter, Prima Gadim has a svara, which, for example, Rav Harfenis has a number of tshuvas where he talks about this. He's not inclined towards this, but he says that this is, again, something that it's definitely something to factor in, that the Prima Gadim says, as a general rule, there's no borer when it is... you're not interested in one more than the other. When you're just putting them, let's say, in two different places, and this could come up a lot, this could be a very significant heter, especially if it was 100% agreed upon, but certainly as a sniff, so it's worthwhile to be aware of. So for example, with silverware, you want to set the table and put the silverware in different places, so it's not that you want the forks more than the knives, it's that you just want the forks here and the knives here. So there are those who maintain, such as the Prima Gadim, that that's not called borer, and again, as a sniff, as a factor that sometimes is factored in, that is something as well to be aware of, and something that many rely on. Makom ha-zarech. Hi.
If by silverware, if you would not hold of this heter by the Prima Gadim, would that mean that what would be ochal, what would be psolos, would change from minute to minute? Because you have like this whole thing, and you're trying to put out the forks now. So then the ochal is the forks.
Yeah, I guess so.
So then if you would take out a knife, that would be lower. But then if you're trying to now put out the knife, so then if you take out the fork, that would be lower.
It sounds like it, yeah. It would be challenging. Yes?
Would the same thing apply to clearing the table?
Clearing the table so that you want to put stuff...
Correct. Yeah. Choosing to take knives in one bunch, forks in one bunch.
Very possibly. Yeah, because there again, you're more interested in both. So then one could certainly make a strong case that that's, I think Prima Gadim would agree that that's not an active voter. Hi.
I was just for Sandy's case, it would make a difference if you, let's say you're putting down forks and you took out the knife. Mm-hmm. Make a difference if you put the knife where the knife should go. You just say, okay, we're putting down forks, and like, switch and start putting down knives for,
Right, so putting it then once in place, once you already have it. It's probably not necessarily borer either, although then again you have those who disagree. And it gets a little bit more complex. But there is a lot more to say about this, even according to our plan of not saying so much about this. There's still a lot more to say about this. So what we'll do is, again, our agenda is, so we said we'll have a mincha now, so we'll do that. We're going to keep people waiting. But what we'll do is tomorrow...